Satanic Crime, now on A View from the Bunker. The enemy strikes at the weakest among us and often uses those most trusted. That's why sexual crimes involving children, especially on the part of those in the clergy, is so shocking. And sadly, there are far too many of those stories in the news. Our guest tonight is the author of Lucifer's Lodge, Satanic Ritual Abuse in the Catholic Church, also Satanic Crime, A Threat in the New Millennium, and a number of e-books available at his website. He's also the host of Sphinx Radio and has had a number of fascinating guests over the couple of years he's done that program. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit, too. We welcome to the bunker William H. Kennedy. Bill, good to talk with you again.
Very good to be here, Derek. It's very appropriate that this show has the title that it does because the last time we talked, I've become more and more of a survivalist more than anything else with the way the people at the top of our economic and political pyramid treat the rest of us, these very few people. I've gone into survival mode, so yeah. I'm happy to be in a bunker.
Well, we say that tongue-in-cheek. We kind of joke about it because we know that ultimately he that is in us is greater than he that is in the world. So we certainly don't want to give anyone the impression that we're stockpiling anything more substantial than, say, beans and rice and toilet paper. Because we're convinced when the economy really crashes... Yeah, it's going to be toilet paper becomes the medium of exchange. Forget about gold. Stockpile stuff you can use. So, well, anyway, Bill, there have been a number of cases, very disturbing, high-profile cases that have been in the news lately. And ever since we first had the opportunity to read Lucifer's Lodge and your research into satanic ritual abuse, both within and outside the Roman Catholic Church, of course, you're the fellow that we think about in terms of getting your opinion, your take on what's happening out there. And these cases over the last couple of months include the Philip Garrido case, the man who abducted 11-year-old J.C. Dugard 19 years ago, or there 18 years ago, and held her essentially as a sex slave for all this time. Another recent case from that same area, east of San Francisco, Tracy, California, this time, Melissa Huckabee, a woman who's portrayed by the media as a Sunday school teacher, although interestingly enough, it's Sunday school at a church with no members, is accused of the murder of 8-year-old Sandra Cantu. There was another case from Tracy, California, earlier this year, back in January, of a 15-year-old boy who showed up at a health club wearing nothing but boxer shorts and a chain around his ankle, and apparently he'd just broken free from a basement where he'd been held captive in chains for a year. What, and of course, that's also the same general area where the Scott and Lacey Peterson case took place. Bill, what is going on in the Central Valley of California?
Well, it's very strange. I'm very familiar with that area. I have my master's degree from San Francisco State University in philosophy, and I studied with Jacob Needleman there, the occult historian. Hmm. So I'm pretty up on what's going on. And what I discovered about that area of the country is that there is definitely a huge network of Satanists and people who are into creepy sexual-type activities. Now, when I was out there, this was 89 to 92, you used to read a lot of things in the news. This was before the internet. They had things in newspapers and personal ads about people looking for sex slaves. Very strange stuff. I took note of that then. But what's happening there seems highly bizarre, especially that case of the boy who showed up in the underwear and a chain to escape his slave master. This is actually a very widespread thing. And the other big case that got much more national publicity was actually in New York, and it was a fellow named John Jamelski. Sorry for my poor pronunciation there. But this fellow was keeping sex slaves. He built a chamber under his house, like a bunker. And he would abduct women and keep them there as sex slaves. And he had a weird religious thing. He had a giant crucifix down there. And he used to make these women pray, you know, kneel naked and pray and tell all their sins. And he would mistreat them. He would not feed them well and beat them and repeatedly rape them. And what happened was this Jamelski didn't kill any of them. When he got tired of them, he would simply let them go, and one of his victims went straight to the police. She was held as a sex slave for 2 years.
Hmm.
2 years. And she went back to her mother, told her what happened. They went to the police, and the police did nothing.
Really?
Okay. The police did absolutely nothing to go look out what she said. What happened is later on he was caught on a different case. And the police did nothing to investigate this. They thought that woman was just some nut.
Hmm.
So when you hear about the kid in the Central Valley, you know, coming in, that doesn't really surprise me. Now, another thing that was around that area, and I'm talking there again, 89 to 92, when I was there, a friend of mine showed me a bizarre sex slave contract that they were selling in porno magazines.
Hmm.
So this was very, very strange. Me and this other fellow who were at San Francisco State, Jacob Needleman, used to give us assignments to find the bizarrest materials we could find in the Bay Area,
or
strangest groups, and there's a lot of strange ones out there for a lot of different reasons. You know, not all of them do illegal things, but on the strange meter, on a scale of 1 to 10, these people are like a 14. But one of the things was this underground fetish sex slave, kind of with Satanist overtones to it. And this very bizarre contract, it had two names, and the slave master would give the victim, I guess, a sex slave name. They would change their name, and they would only address each other. And this bizarre contract that was from this porno magazine now, you know, printed up, and I don't know how large a distribution it got, but it looked like a fairly, you know, widespread porno book. But it had very strange things like the master may inflict pain on the slave at any time for any reason. The slave must do absolutely everything that the master says without question. Really bizarre, kind of sick stuff. And these were, as I say, sold. So this points to not only a secret network, but certainly a secret network that is fueled by mainstream pornography sources. You know, they wouldn't be selling stuff like that if there weren't a market for it. You know what I'm saying? It's supply and demand.
Sure.
You know, they wouldn't come up with something like that just for fun, you know?
Well, Bill, we know from reading about Aleister Crowley, and you provided a number of works at your website and in your books, especially Satanic Crime, A Threat in the New Millennium, about Crowley and his background, his practices. And we know that deviant, and I know that's a relative term, you know, it's in the eye of the beholder, but I think for most of us we can accept on a pretty common agreement as to what deviant entails. Deviant sexual behavior was a big part of the rituals that Aleister Crowley developed for his Gnostic Mass and his you know, his OTO organization. What is it about these deviant types of sex behaviors that attracts people? Is it just a kinky physical thrill, or is there something more to it than that?
Well, it's very multi-leveled, and you know, we all like the simplest explanations for the material we cover or the stories we hear. You know, Occam's razor, the simplest explanation is the best.
Mm-hmm.
However, when you're in the realm of Satanism and the psychology of Satanists, it's a very multifaceted, multi-level thing. These people are usually people who, you know, didn't get along in high school. They didn't get high grades. They weren't on any sports teams. They weren't popular with the opposite sex. They went to this in rebellion against a society they feel has rejected them. And what you've got to keep in mind is, when you get into bizarre sex stuff, I mean, let's face it, Freud was right to a great extent. Sexuality is a huge and powerful influence.
Absolutely.
And even from a Christian perspective, you know, sex is still a huge, it's a sacred thing. It even takes on more meaning when you add the Christian element to sexuality. It's just, it's a hugely powerful influence. So the fact that a lot of these Satanists are involved with deviant sexual practices comes as no surprise, in the sense that they, you know, they become kind of self-worshippers to a great extent, and sexuality plays into that, ego-boosting, things of that nature. And it's quite a strange thing because, as I say, it's multi-level. These people have been bullied. They feel dejected. They're really not, never got along with the opposite sex, might have tension with their parents. So these are people who've essentially given up on mainstream society and mainstream religion. That's the first thing you must understand. The second thing, once you abandon that, you certainly rebel against it. And the third thing is, to rebel against it, you must get deeper and deeper into more deviant activity, much like a heroin addict needs a stronger dose as his habit builds up. That first dose that the heroin addict shot up, he'll need 4 or 5 times that, you know, in 3 or 4 months, very mm-hmm. quick. And with Satanism, it's the same thing. Now, I'm not saying all Satanists get into illegal activity, but they certainly get into very strange sex. They tend to move, if they do escalate towards something bigger, it's usually things like they start killing animals first. And in some cases, and I want to make this clear, this is very rare, what I'm about to say, extremely rare for a Satanist to capture someone or murder someone or kill someone. It's an extremely rare occurrence.
Right.
And the chance of a stranger, a Satanist boogeyman, like grabbing your kids and running off with them and performing a strange ritual and maybe murdering with them, that the odds of that happening are very astronomical. What people up there should do with their children is, most rapes are acquaintance rapes, I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm.
They're people the person has known for a long time. So worry about your friends and your family around your children.
Right.
The boogeyman around the corner probably won't get them. Most of the time it's one of those people.
Well, and I'm not certainly trying to stir up any echoes of the satanic panic of the 80s and early 90s. Although, let me be clear, I do believe that, and I think you would agree, Bill, that satanic ritual abuse is real. It is not a figment of the imagination of paranoid fundamentalist Christians. But my point, I guess, in looking at the Philip Garrido case and the case of Melissa Huckabee, where in both cases young girls were abducted and sexually abused, at least that's the charge in the Huckabee case and in the Garrido case. And we also saw that in the case of the Toledo case. Father Robinson, was it?
Yeah, Father Gerald Robinson.
Gerald Robinson, where the
murdered
the nun, but that murder came to light because women who had been sexually abused as girls came forward to complain and try to press charges against Father Gerald Robinson and his colleagues for abusing them as children. So while it may be rare, I guess
it does happen, and that's where I come in.
Right? Yeah. And my question is, you know, why these sexual acts against children? Why not with consenting adults?
Well, there again, it ties into the psychology I mentioned earlier. Much like a heroin addict needs a stronger dose of heroin or OxyContin or whatever opiate he or she can get his hands on, and their tolerance builds up. It's the same thing with these Satanists, these ones who become deviant. You know, generally speaking, they start off with animals, then that's not enough. They don't get the same thrill out of it, and they move on to people. And, you know, they sexually abuse other consenting adults. But the next level of evil, and this is where they get their thrill, it's kind of a diabolical mysticism
mm-hmm.
or an evil high, It's the opposite of like Christian mysticism, where you let the Holy Spirit permeate you, body, soul, and mind. These people, they go to the other end. They let the devil permeate them. And the devil, remember, the devil can reward us in this world. He can make sex better. He can give us money and wealth. But the price is you have to get more and more deviant. And the most deviant thing you can do, you know, would be to rape a child. It's worse than murder. It's, you know, you murder someone, their suffering is over. You know, you rape a child, their suffering is just begun. You know, they're going to have to go the rest of their lives are ruined then. And in many ways, it's a fate worse than death. And these people who step into the realm of child molestation, whether they are linked to Satanist groups or not, and not all of them are. I never claimed that.
Right.
But once you get in that realm, you've stepped in to the specter of pure evil. Evil at that point.
Well, and that's one of the things that Crowley believed, that the bigger the taboo, the bigger the sexual taboo that you could break, the greater the magical power you would bring unto yourself through that act.
It's like the law of attraction, the secret, but you throw a very strange sex in. Now, what Crowley used to do on his island in Sicily, he had a satanic commune there, is he would have sex between goats and human beings, mm-hmm. and he would allow the children of the community to watch. Mm. Okay? He would let children watch bestiality. It's unclear if they were sexually abused, and I wouldn't say that about anyone, even Aleister Crowley, if I didn't have absolute proof. However, it is clear that he allowed children to watch bestiality and rituals, and it's also clear that he called for the human sacrifice of a baby male child in his book Magic and Theory and Practice. That, you know, this can be easily verified. So he certainly wasn't. That is child abuse, what he did, allowing children to watch goats and adults engage in sex. That is certainly, mm-hmm. certainly child abuse, but it's not molestation. So there again, when you get into the rape of children, the thrill factor, you know, these people, there's a common trend. They start with pornography, then they go to, like, prostitutes if they can, and then, you know, they need a bigger dose, a stronger dose, so they, you know, they start sexually abusing children, which is the ultimate breaking of a taboo. As you said, there's no society, tribal, or industrial that tolerates this on any level once it becomes public knowledge, mm-hmm. you know? And it's a universal pure evil.
I don't have any statistics to back this up, but it just seems like the news lately has brought us more high-profile cases from California in recent years than just about anywhere. And there have been some other cases, to be sure, like the Hosanna Church case down in Louisiana, where the police said, well, this was satanic, and we've got the robes and the symbols on the walls and on the floors, and, oh, wait a second, no, it's not satanic, never mind, nothing to see here. But, again, the Garrido case, the Huckabee case, and others through the years, the McMartin preschool case, which wasn't in that same area of California, but that was one of the first high-profile cases of child abuse. Again, most of it was dismissed from the courts in spite of evidence that that something took place there. Is there something about California that attracts this kind of that attracts this kind of behavior, or am I just imagining things here? Am I a prejudiced Midwesterner?
No, not at all, Derek, because the San Francisco Bay Area has been a hotbed for this stuff since the cowboy days.
Hmm.
Okay, and when you go back in 1872, and, you know, Wyatt Earp was still out there gunslinging in those days, a group was formed there called the Bohemian Grove.
Mm, okay.
Now, just to give you a quick breakdown, the Bohemian Grove was started by rich railroaders and bankers who were living in San Francisco who wanted a kind of cultural center where they could mingle with each other, and it quickly evolved into a secret society. And they perform this bizarre ritual every year. They're headquartered in California, but they have a the Bohemian Club in California. I had lunch there once. It was very nice. A friend there, and I didn't know what it was at the time.
Huh.
But it was
for listeners who aren't aware, the Bohemian Grove is not the wooded retreat itself, or not. That's not the location. The Bohemian Grove is the club, and their headquarters are in San Francisco.
The club in San Francisco, and they own a grove called the Bohemian Grove in Northern California that they go every summer for 2 weeks. The world's richest and most powerful men are asked to join,
mm-hmm.
and I'm talking people like Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
Is a Bohemian Grove member.
Well, although Nixon later called it the most faggy, blankety-blank thing he'd ever seen.
Now, Nixon, when you listen to the tapes that they got from the White House, he has very mixed feelings about it, because there's that talk he gave there, that little stab against it, saying that it was a homosexual organization with a different set of values.
Right.
Okay, and this is kind of
that's not
what
to defend. That's not to defend Nixon. It's just to point out.
No. But in another talk he gave, he said that he knew that he would win the presidency after he gave a talk at the Bohemian Grove. At the Bohemian Grove, Richard Nixon concluded that he could be president of the United States. So he has mixed feelings. He knew it was powerful and important enough that he had to, join it. Though he didn't think much of these particular, I don't know what he thought of the rituals. I guess he thought they were faggy. But
the point is, he still went and shook hands and pressed the flesh that he could become the president of the United States.
That he would be president by doing
right.
so. Now, this homosexual thing you're talking about, another guy I met during my sojourn in California, a fellow named Hunter S. Thompson, who is a famous writer.
Mm-hmm.
I read his books. I met him a couple times. I liked him personally very much. He died of an alleged suicide after in his last book, he came out with a thing which basically accused the Bohemian Grove of molesting children in this same area you're talking about in California. And it's very strange. Hunter was on the phone with his ex-wife discussing his speaking tour, and he said, hold on a minute, and then he allegedly shot himself in the head. But it is deeply, deeply suspected that he was murdered, and it was made to look like a suicide because he bought out this Bohemian Club, Bohemian Grove molestation thing.
Hmm.
Now, it's very, very strange because it's an occult organization. They worship an owl. Alex Jones snuck in there and done their weird owl ceremony where they do a mock human sacrifice to this giant owl god in
right.
all Ku Klux Klan type outfits.
Right. Cremation of care, and they call the owl Molech. Yeah, it's
very,
yeah.
very strange stuff goes on there. And back to Hunter S. Thompson, it's He claimed that they were running a pedophile ring out of there. And a late friend of mine and ours, really, Michael Corbin, God rest his soul, was also looking into this in the very area you're talking about where all these strange things are coming up. I mean, the image of that little girl on the security camera skipping away out of the camera view and,
mm-hmm.
Knowing that what horrible things happened to her, it's very blood-curdling and chilling.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Bohemian Grove in that area, I'm not saying these people are all connected, but as I said earlier, there's this cultural milieu out there where you can get these sex slave contracts, written in very nice calligraphy, I remember, very,
mm-hmm.
very strange stuff. So this is what they're selling in stores. So,
there've been a couple of websites where, guys have gone down with cameras to the annual gay pride parade in San Francisco and taken pictures of what's going on the streets of San Francisco with the protection of the police to keep the peace and to keep protesters away from, bothering the folks in the parade. And frankly, it's not safe for work, to borrow a phrase from the vernacular. You can't look at the pictures in a public place that are of things that were taking place on the streets of San Francisco.
I mean, a blatant sexuality, S&M activity, sodomy, you name it. I mean, this is the public stuff, so God knows what goes on in private. But there's a connectedness to all of these things in that these people live in these clandestine realms, and with the internet, it becomes very strange because they can unite like you can't believe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there was a series that they did on television called To Catch a Predator,
right,
where they did these stings. Chris Hansen got this group called Perverted Justice, which goes after online predators. And, I mean, they caught people meeting children at sex. They caught a Baptist minister,
mm-hmm.
caught a rabbi, David Kay. They actually caught a whole bunch. David Kay, one of the rabbis they caught in this thing, Chris Hansen, they discovered he had a whole network of rabbi pedophiles.
Oh, boy.
With raping children. So just under the surface, it's a matter of, as you said earlier, it's an infiltration of, you know, things like the rabbinical class and the Catholic priest class and just right down the line. Now, I want to also point out, and I can't give you statistics for this, that a lot of these children that go missing actually go unreported, especially when they're taken from extremely poor cities.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are reports, same area we're talking about. I get a lot of reports from the tent city in the Sacramento area.
Okay.
From a lot of these people have lost their homes, and they've set up a little tent city.
Mm-hmm.
They listen to me on various radios and in the library on the internet, and they text message me to my email account. And they also send me emails from local libraries. They use the equipment. I'm told that there have been children gone missing there, and they've reported it to the police, and the police won't even take a report because these people, you know, they have no legal address. They have no this. They have no that. The police don't believe them. They think they're just looking for attention.
Hmm.
So even, you know, that's one situation. And, you know, I confirm these people who contacted me were there. You know, I have contact in Sacramento, and they're telling the truth. And I believe they're telling the truth about these children going missing. And, you know, God knows who grabbed them. It could be one of these secret society groups. It could be a lone nut like a Jamelski. It could, you know, it could be a variety of things. But when a child goes missing, a pre-adolescent child, he's usually abducted by someone who's abusing him. And a lot of the times it's in these random kidnappings. Again, they're very rare, but they do happen. And the big question is, how do we gather statistics on, like, these tent city-type situations?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I pray to God that this is an isolated incident. What these people are telling me about from the tent cities of children being abducted and disappearing in the police. I hope they've told me of three cases, and I hope and pray that those are the only three. But from my experience, I think it's much deeper than that. And again, it's my opinion, and it's a speculation, a conjecture. I have nothing to back this up. But I have confirmed that these children have gone missing, and I fear there are more.
Well, we're talking with William H. Kennedy, author of Lucifer's Lodge, Satanic Ritual Abuse in the Catholic Church, and Satanic Crime, A Threat in the New Millennium. Also the host of Sphinx Radio on the internet at sphinxradio.com. Bill, you're branching out into other areas of media as well. You're getting involved in producing documentaries, I understand. What are you working on?
Well, I'm not producing documentaries. Here's what I am doing. I just finished part of a series for True TV, for a series that's called Children That Kill. And I filmed this with a filmmaker from Quebec named Christian Page. He runs a production company called Blue Planet Productions, which is they work out of Quebec, and they make different series. Like, they made a series on the paranormal for the Space Channel in Canada called Missing Link, which dealt with things like Bigfoot and UFOs and ghosts and things of that nature. That's one of the series they did. And they did another series called Children That Kill, and there'll be I just finished filming it, and this is the breakdown. This is how it's going to appear. It's going to come on in 2010, I think in March and April. It's going to be on Television Quebec in a French version. Simultaneously, it's going to be on Court TV Canada in an English version. And then after that, by next summer 2010, it will be on True TV primetime down here in the States. It's called Children That Kill. That's the tentative name for the documentary series. Now, that might change, and I'll let you know if it does. But I was in the episode of Ricky Casso. And Ricky Casso was a fellow who killed his friend in 1984 in a satanic ritual in Northport, Long Island, in New York. It's the famous Say You Love Satan case, which I cover in Satanic Crime. Now, the filming of that went so well that Christian Page, who is the big cheese on these products, I'm not the director or producer, he is. I want to make that. He's my boss. I'm not taking any credit from him. But he's actually a very nice man, and so is his staff, especially Denise Bonds, his assistant and his cameraman. When they came down here to film, they were wonderful to work with. We did it very quick. But that went so well that we've gotten the funding to do a 13-part series on a cult crime. And I will be in every episode as a talking head expert. Now, when I have my more egotistical moments, seeing that I'm in all 13 episodes, I like to say it's my series, but that's mon series in French, but that's stretching it a bit. It's Christian Page's series, and I'm going to be in it and working on it. He's the director and producer of Blue Planet Productions, and this 13-part series, I can't say which networks it will be on. I will only say that people will discover it very after the negotiations are over.
I hear nothing. Yeah.
Lasagne Schultz.
Right, right.
Yeah, very good, very good. You're old like me. Half the kids don't even know what that is.
I'm older.
But, this series, what we're going to do is try and cover some of the more obscure cases of occult and satanic crime. And the one thing we want to do is a whole hour documentary on a guy named Richard Chase. Richard Chase is the vampire of Sacramento, our favorite part of the country.
Yeah.
And in the late 70s, he murdered a bunch of people. He thought he was a vampire. And he began to murder people and drink their blood, thinking that if he didn't drink their blood, he would disintegrate.
Okay.
His last victim was a 22-year-old baby, which is, I know, it's just a horrible thought. But that's one of the cases we're going to go over. There's a couple other more obscure cases. Now, the network may have us do some of the more well-known cases like David Berkowitz and Charles Manson, the son of, you know, all that stuff, which has been done to death. But if the network wants it, we'll dedicate some of these 13 episodes to them. But we're going to look more at the obscure cases that I should say they're covered in the mainstream media, but they're usually put on the back burner of coverage. For example, they're never on the homepage of the New York Times or the Boston Globe or what have you. They're usually buried somewhere, you know, and it's very strange because these stories, you think they'd make national headlines, but really don't, because the powers that be, for reasons I'm still trying to understand, they don't like the mainstream public to ponder too much on the nature of the occult aspects of a lot of the crime that see around us. I don't fully understand it. I think they're covering it up myself. But
well, a classic example of that again is the Hosanna Church case from Louisiana, where the police told the press that we've got the these markings and these robes that they wore in the rituals, and there's these symbols and sigils that are painted on the floor and on the walls. And oh, wait a minute, no, it's not an occult crime. Never mind, forget it. Just a case of abuse. That's all.
Yeah. They like to say it's a drug deal gone wrong, or a case of abuse, or someone who was bullied. And it's very strange. I'll give you another case we're going to do. And this just came up. This is a local case in the Boston area, my neck of the woods here. There's a fellow named James Riva, who in 1980 somehow got the notion that he was a 700-year-old vampire. He's a big fan of, as I was, of Dark Shadows.
Oh, yeah.
By her soap opera.
I used to have the board game.
Collins, and Well, James River was a bigger fan than we were, because he came to the conclusion that he was a 700-year-old vampire. And what he did is he killed his 74-year-old grandmother, who was in a wheelchair, and fed off her blood. And what he did, how he killed her, is very strange. He shot her with a gun, but he painted the bullets gold.
Okay.
He smeared the bullets in him, because if a silver bullet kills a child of Satan, a vampire, then gold, which is the Christian color, the color of Christ, the mm-hmm. color of the chalice in the Catholic Church, of course, in vampire logic, you have to kill your victim with gold bullets.
Okay.
And he killed the woman, his grandmother, and fed off the blood. And then, just a few months ago, this was 1980, he tried to get parole, saying he was psychotic at the time. But he attacked a guard thinking he was a vampire while he was in jail, so they didn't let him out. And he was selling art from his prison, and people made him stop because they didn't like him making money mm-hmm. off of crime. You know, he stopped because people asked him to stop. But he was denied parole. And there again, most people in the United States have never heard of James River. They've never heard of the case in Sacramento mm-hmm. I just gave you. You know, these things happen. They go underreported. And there again, I'm not saying every murderer is a Satanist or an occultist or thinks they're a vampire or this or that. Most criminals steal for money. And that's their big motivation, not Satanism. Money is the root of all evil when it comes to most crime.
Well, the love of money, yeah.
Love of money, the love of the obsession with money to the point where you'll kill other people. And the other big thing is what we talked about earlier. It's usually sex or money that people kill over, very passionate mm-hmm. things.
And the authorities will typically say, Bill, that these crimes that have occult overtones, for example, another case from California, Richard Hamlin, from last year, where he was convicted of torturing his wife, if I remember the case correctly. His wife had gone to the police and said that her father was the head of a satanic group that had demanded a sacrifice of her husband. And through a series of bizarre twists and turns, too long to get into here, Richard Hamlin, the husband, wound up on trial and was convicted on charges of torturing his wife, which under California's sentencing law means he could spend the rest of his life in prison. And again, the bizarre thing is that it was his wife who originally went to the police and said, I've been sexually abused for years by my family, my father, and they want to kill my husband. And the husband winds up in prison for the rest of his life. And the occult nature, the occult links to this case were downplayed and rarely reported on. The Hosanna case I've talked about, the Father Gerald Robinson case from Toledo it was big news in Toledo, but it didn't make much national news. And when these cases do come out, it seems to me that whatever occult aspects there are downplayed or denied. Now, Bill, is it really the case that a lot of these occult crimes like Son of Sam or the Manson family or whatever are just sort of playing at being involved with the occult? Is there a true spiritual presence here, an influence from the dark side at work?
Okay. People can interpret what I report any way they want, you know, but no one can deny the satanic elements. Now, personally, I believe that there's a devil who causes mischief and horror in human affairs. But even if you don't, even if you're out there and you're listening and you're an atheist, I don't delve too much into theology or the nature of religion. What I try to do is report as accurately and precisely as I can on occult and satanic crimes. And no one can deny the satanic elements that are there. How people interpret them are secondary to what my function is. My function is really, I'm not a minister, I'm not a priest, I'm not an evangelist. I'm a writer and speaker on religious topics that focuses on occult crimes that go underreported. So I kind of leave theology to theologians and theological debates to people better trained in this than I. But what I think is important about my work is that I'm extremely accurate as I can be. And no one's 100% perfect. I'm not claiming that. But I try and back up what I say with sound sources. And people can see it at williamhkennedy.com, and they can go to the ritual abuse multimedia page there, and you'll see tons of cases like I'm talking about, including the Father Robinson case, which only True TV, when he was on trial, got into any of the satanic aspects. One network kind of hype up certain things when it's convenient. And, you know, I'm doing things for them. I hope they're not mad at me. But that's a true observation. They did do a good job with the Gerald Robinson case, but only when he was on trial and only for a couple of days. And then they completely dropped it. And there's not much about him on any other network. So there again, when you look at the media as a whole, Gerald Robinson was put on the back burner because only one major cable network covered it that really focuses on true crime fans, you know, True TV.
Right.
And the mainstream American shows like Good Morning America and the Today Show and programs of that nature didn't cover Gerald Robinson
at all. And you'd think that the 24-hour cable news networks, which are always looking for fodder for the shows, Nancy Grace, Jane Velez Mitchell, or whatever her name is, you'd think that one of them would have picked up because there are sensational aspects to that story. But the only place you can find any consistent coverage of that story, in-depth coverage, was the Toledo Blade newspaper, which still has those archived articles online, I believe.
I actually was an advisor to the Toledo Blade during the coverage of when the Gerald Robinson case initially broke. The Toledo Blade contacted me. And I was an advisor to them as the case unfolded.
Mm-hmm.
And what I told them initially, and they didn't quite believe me, I said, it will come out that Robinson was not acting alone, that he was part of a larger satanic group, and he wasn't a lone nut murdering Satanists. He would have had other contact with many other people in this. And I turned out to be right. There was a satanic group there that Robinson was a part of called Sisters of the Assumed Mary, or SAM for short. And what they did is they sexually abused young girls 5, 6, 7 years old in a coffin and consecrated their private parts to Lucifer with a snake and did a lot of bizarre sexual type things that I really don't want to get into. It's a tasteful thought, to be honest with you. But he was part of a larger thing. And the guy I advised there was a friend of mine named Mike Sala, who was a reporter for the Toledo Blade, who just before that had won the Pulitzer Prize for reporting he did on a Vietnam story. So, strangely, when the Robinson case broke, as shocked as I was quite flattered that a Pulitzer Prize winner would contact me as an authority. That, you know, my ego kicked in for a second. I admit it. You know, I'm a human being. But to get back to the bigger thing, these things happen, and children are far more abused than we realize, and they're far more abused in ritualistic settings than we realize. Now, it's impossible to get statistics about how many people are being sexually abused. Now, there's an organization out there called Not For Sale. And what they do is they look at international human sex trafficking, part of which does deal in satanic and ritual abuse. And this is run primarily by the Russian mob internationally with a lot of connections. But their guesstimate is that there are 27 million people in the world living in sexual bondage. In other words, according to this group, there are 27 million abducted sex slaves in the world, okay? That's a stunning, you know, that's larger than some countries.
Yeah.
You know, when you what a stunning number. Now, I think that's a very low number. I think they're giving a low estimate, in my opinion.
Well, a lot of listeners in the developed world, a lot of our listeners, of course, in the United States would probably be shocked by that number. But when you look at the sorts of things that have come out about, well, United Nations troops and the way they take sexual advantage of people in places like Sudan, or the stories that came out some years ago during the 90s about, and the name of the company escapes me, but it was a contractor for the Dyncorp in Bosnia running a sex trade there of women from Eastern Europe. It's not really that implausible.
Oh, no, not at all. And they're a very good organization, and they are very, you know, they got sociologists and psychologists to look into this. There's a lot of fundamentalist Christian groups who are affiliated with Not For Sale. It's not a Christian group itself, but it tends to attract Christian groups, and what they're trying to form is a kind of underground railroad for victims of sexual slavery. You know, set up safe houses for people who've been abducted or drawn into prostitution to have a place to go where the pimp can't get at them, where they can receive medical care and counseling, whatever they need to get their lives back on track. And it's a wonderful idea, and they helped a lot of people. But when you look at the figure of 27 million, it's a Herculean task that they have before them. Their goal is to eliminate this, have a huge underground railroad. But when you consider that the head of Interpol, when asked about this human trafficking and sex slavery, said they lack the manpower to even put a slight dent in the huge numbers of people who are in sexual slavery. So,
well, it's like you said about the things being bought and sold through the magazines that you saw back during your time in San Francisco. If there wasn't a demand for it, there wouldn't be a supply.
Well, right. When you asked me earlier about all these abductions and things in, you know, specifically California, and there's an acute problem there. I agree with you. There are hot spots for this. But when you look at the big picture of 27 million people, it becomes stunning.
Yeah.
You know, it's far worse than the slavery we had in the United States in the 1850s. You know, it's far, far worse than that. It's global. It's organized. And there's nobody doing very much to stop it.
Now, some
one group, you know.
No, I'm sorry to interrupt, but now some people may take offense to that statement that this is worse than slavery, but And it is slavery. There's no question. There's obviously not a racial component to it. But getting back to what you mentioned earlier, you made reference to the multimedia section of your website. And I do want to point people to that because of the incredible amount of research that you've compiled into one place at williamhkennedy.com. Tell us about the kind of resources and documentation that you've put there for people to do their own research and see exactly how big this problem is.
Okay, number one, people who go to williamhkennedy.com, I guarantee you, you will see the best occult history webpage on the web. Why do I say that? Because what I've done, I've set up 10 different pages which are interrelated to a certain extent, primarily on occult, satanic, witchcraft, and metaphysical themes. And what I've done is I've categorized it. Like, for example, if you go to the occult history multimedia page, you'll find an index there which will take you to links to all the best documentary films on YouTube and Google and Daily Motion that deal with occult topics. You will get documentary films, audio clips, free ebooks, all for free. There's a few things for sale here or there, especially on the survivalist page there. But what you will get is links to the very best documentaries on the web. And, I've been compiling this and working on this every day for years and years and years. So I have hundreds and hundreds of hours of films on Satanism, witchcraft, divination. I have a big section on politics in the occult, how our leaders of the world are actually involved in esoteric and occult practices, like Tony Blair, Richard Nixon, we mentioned earlier, Ronald Reagan and his astrologer. Mm-hmm. So if you go to williamhkennedy.com, I guarantee them the best occult webpage on the net.
Now, you also host a radio show on the internet called Sphinx Radio, where you talk with a real interesting variety of guests, everybody from Gerald Casale of Devo, one of my favorite bands from back in the day, actually, to G. Gordon Liddy.
Right. Well, what do G. Gordon Liddy and Jerry Casale, well, what do they have in common? Well, number one, they're both my friends, but apart from that, at Sphinx Radio, I consider it a free speech zone. And what I love to do is get people with very extreme and, far out and even lunatic fringe views, mm-hmm. give them a chance to say what they have to say in a non-judgmental manner. Now, just to give you another example, I had Mark Rudd on, who ran the Weather Underground
right.
in the 1960s, a terrorist group, quite frankly, or a bunch of bombers.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also had Tom Metzner, who's the head of White Aryan Resistance at mm-hmm. one time, a right-wing neo-fascist group. Now, I should point out, Derek, I don't endorse everyone I have on my show, and I don't agree with everyone on my show, and I don't particularly like everyone I have on my show.
Well, I give you credit because I'm a little more selective with my guests than you are.
The point of Sphinx Radio is certainly to explore the enigmas of the ages and the puzzles of the present, like I have there, but it's also a venue for free speech. And to be honest with you, Derek, if someone like Timothy McVeigh if someone had listened to him, if someone like me had listened to him, if he had some venue, I think he wouldn't have done what he did, okay? And that's a big statement, I know.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look how alienated these people who turn to acts of violence, like that horrible man who killed a guard at the Holocaust Museum.
Right.
I mean, he was a man who no one would listen to.
Well, I don't need a lot of people on those white supremacist websites that were listening to him.
Well, he wasn't a big figure in the neo-Nazi. He was no Tom Metzner. He was no John DeNugent. He really didn't have any following, so to speak, nor did he have any major, no third party like Sphinx Radio ever asked him to come on.
Well, you know, you may have a point. My personal opinion is that guys like him and Metzner and McVay is that they were listening, and they were listening to voices coming from the wrong side.
Okay, I mean, you know, Derek, Sphinx Radio is provocative to everybody. A lot of people are infuriated that, that I have Mark Rutt on.
Well, no, that's not a problem. I'm not criticizing your decision to have them on, because I think it makes for a... For the same reason that we watch or read about... watch videos about or read about the occult. It's not because we have an interest in joining the occult, but it's because we want to be aware of what they're thinking and how they're thinking in order to be better informed and better protected against that kind of poisonous thought.
Sure. And when you take a guy like Tom Metzner, he's kind of a self-parody. And he's really harmless in the sense that no major person that I can see, I know he got in trouble for one thing that he allegedly provoked him. But when you take someone like, take Ernst Zundel, the Holocaust denier, and I believe the Holocaust happened. I think 6 to 8 million people were deliberately butchered by the Germans. I'm not a Holocaust denier myself. But Ernst Zundel was a guy who lived between the United States and Canada for many years, never arrested for any crime, and he started to express Holocaust denial views, and the United States deported him back to Germany, rendition, and they threw him in jail. You know, and he's in jail as we speak for denying the Holocaust. Well, who do we go after next? Those moon landing lunatics? Remember bothered John Glenn and got punched right in the nose? You know, are we going to let those moon landing deniers go around and bother our former astronauts? Do we throw them in jail too?
Gee, I hope not.
Next, Derek. I mean, who? People who have radio shows that talk about Satanism and cause satanic panic? We can't have those people around talking.
That's a dangerous thought.
We'll be like the 80s again. There'll be a satanic panic.
That's right.
Because I talk about James River and Gerald Robinson. So my goal is certainly to test the parameters of free speech. And I have a lot, you know, I have provocative guests on Sphinx Radio. But more or less, I really love our Constitution. And I really love the First Amendment to the Constitution. And I would rather give people a voice than stifle them or, you know, have them thrown in jail in other countries because I don't like what they have to say.
No, I agree with you there. I agree with you there.
And I don't deny the Holocaust, and, you know, I don't particularly like what Mark Rutt did in 1960. You know, there's a lot I don't like, but the purpose of the show is for free speech. And I should say that the guests we're talking about are a very small number. Sphinx Radio. You know, I have a lot of people who talk about ancient history. You know, Robert Schock and Brad Steiger, people like that. And, we talk about Atlantis. I mean, so it's not...
That's why I wanted to ask you about that, Bill, because it is such a wide range of topics and viewpoints that you present on Sphinx Radio. In fact, and this is something that caught my eye, you've had a couple of very prominent skeptics on your show, and considering the type of research that you do, what was it like interviewing James the Amazing Randi, and forgive me, I've forgotten the name of the fellow who you just...
Dr. Michael Shermer.
Michael Shermer, right, yes, of Skeptic Magazine. What was it like talking with those guys, knowing that they essentially believe that all of your work is about a bunch of hoo-ha?
Well, they never said that specifically about my work, and I even tried to get Penn and Teller to debunk me, but Penn and Teller, and this is for free on the Ritual Abuse page at williamhkennedy.com. You can see Penn and Teller cover the Catholic pre-sexual abuse scandal. They didn't have me on. They must have lost my phone number or something. But they did a case where they pretty much backed up Lucifer's Lodge. You know? And they said that the Pope, our current Pope, was running a pedophile ring, an international pedophile ring. So they confirmed what I had to say, the skeptical community. Now, as far as Dr. Shermer and James the Amazing Randi goes, They were nothing but nice to me. And there again, Derek, Space Radio is first and foremost for free speech. I want a skeptic on my show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want someone who, I want a creationist on my show, and I want an evolutionist on my show. I want a skeptic on my show, and I want a UFO abductee on my show. How people find this and interpret it, well, my listeners, and I have about 30,000 a week with all the streaming stuff. I get a lot of feedback on hits. I get about 4,000 hits a day on my webpage. So people, I want them to make up their own minds about these matters. And I try and give both sides of an issue. So I'll have Mark Rudd on, and I'll have Russell Means on, the Native American activist who calls for violence against our government.
Mm-hmm.
And I will have John DeNugent on, who's a white separatist who thinks blacks and whites should keep away from each other. You know, I will have these people on. I don't endorse them, but my listeners, I owe it to them to give them both sides of an issue and to give them people they pretty much won't hear anyone else, anywhere else. And I even have some wonderful interviews. One I think everyone should listen to is with Professor Mark Juergensmeyer of UC Santa Barbara. And we talk about the psychology of religious violence in that episode and just how these people like McVeigh and the original people who tried to blow up the World Trade Center. What, you know, our conclusion, and it's a quite frightening thing, is that these people aren't too far away from the mainstream. You know, they've just blown a circuit and stepped over a line that a lot of people are hovering at. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I have a lot of material on Sphinx Radio, a lot of interesting material, and it's off-topic and offbeat and all those things. But I guarantee whether you agree with it, disagree with it, get angry, get happy, whatever, you will enjoy Sphinx Radio.
And you can find that at sphinxradio.com, which is also linked from Bill's website, which is williamhkennedy.com. And again, you'll find the research pages there, the multimedia pages with lots and lots of material about the occult, the paranormal, and some of his ebooks, including his writings on the occult from the last few years, a number of articles about the occult and his research, all available at williamhkennedy.com. And, of course, his books, The Excellent Lucifer's Lodge, Satanic Ritual Abuse in the Catholic Church, and Satanic Crime, A Threat in the New Millennium. Bill, it's always interesting and always an education when we talk, and look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thank you, Derek. It's great to be in the bunker.
Links to William H. Kennedy's website, including the pages devoted to research into the occult and satanic crime, will be posted in the show notes, and you'll find those at www.pidradio.com. If you have a comment, question, or guest suggestion to it, or for us, rather, you can get it to us a couple of different ways. Either send us an email at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. That's radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Or you can dial our 24/7 PID radio listener line. Now, this rings straight through to voicemail, so don't worry about wherever you are in the world. Time zone change makes no difference. It's country code 1-317-489-9350. That's 317-489-9350. And if you didn't write that down, don't worry. That's posted at PIDradio.com, along with links to all the places you can find us on the Internet. So next week, we will talk to Michael Bennett, better known as Dr. Future, host of the Future Quake radio program. And in 2 weeks, we'll talk to Susan Lindauer, one of the only Americans charged, arrested and charged under the USA Patriot Act, about what it's like to be declared mentally incompetent to stand trial by your government. Until then, I'm Derek Gilbert, and this is A View from the Bunker.